Oh, yes, that's what we like, a big showbiz start to a Wednesday morning. Yes, love it. Tim Curry, Carol Burnett and Bernadette Peters doing Easy Street in Annie. And I just know a lady who's going to be belting that out good and proper. Delighted to be speaking with Sue Pollard.
Oh, good morning, Doug. That was fantastic listening to that. Talk about an extended ending.
Oh.
I thought it was never going to finish. Fabulous.
Oh, wonderful. You like kicking, Sue.
Oh, yeah, it's such a great number, that, you know.
Oh, it's brilliant, isn't it? I tell you what, you know, you're going to be taking the theatre, the new Victoria Theatre, by storm next week, aren't you? You're a formidable actress, but, of course, many formidable actresses and comedians have played Miss Hannigan. I understand Kathy Bates, she put herself through the misery, didn't she?
Well,
suffering those little girls.
Yeah,
but Carol Burnett.
Right.
Oh, my goodness, Carol Burnett. So who's been your favourite Miss Hannigan, and who do you take inspiration from?
It's really hard, to be honest, because each person that I've ever seen, I first saw Sheila Hancock when she was the first one to do it in the UK, direct from America. And I was so sort of blown away by that, because I'd never seen Annie anyway, for a start, as indeed probably thousands of us hadn't at that time.
Mm.
And I thought, oh, well, great characterisation. It's really difficult, because I think each person has put their own element of whatever they've got into it. And I just like to think, though, that I try not to copy anybody else. Certain things you can only do one way because it's been written like that.
Yes.
But basically, you think to yourself, well, perhaps I could do this here or that bit there. So I think you kind of just use your own imagination, don't you, as you see how the role progresses.
Absolutely. I know you're going to do it your own inimitable way, Sue.
Well, I do hope so. I mean, the thing is, though, babe, you just got, I think as long as you're believable and you actually believe in the character itself and make it real, even though it's very pantomimic, I mean, the whole thing of Annie is, isn't
yes,
it, really?
Yeah.
But, because it reminds me very much of a pantomime. It reminds me, Miss Hannigan could actually be the Wicked Queen in Snow White.
Yeah.
And Annie could indeed be Cinderella, you know.
Yes, it's true, isn't it?
But
yeah.
I think it's got great elements of that in it. It's sentimental, and which I think is, there's nothing wrong with that. I think we all like a bit of that, don't we?
Yes.
And it's lovely, you know, you can have a little bit of a cry, then hopefully you have a good laugh.
Yeah.
And so it's got everything in it, I think, that appeal.
Yeah, it really has, isn't it, Sue?
Yes.
Now, I hope you don't mind me saying, but you do throw yourself into every single part, and it seems as if nothing phases you. Because, of course, when it comes to singing, you started off in working men's clubs, didn't you? One of the toughest gigs in show business. Did it kind of get you used to all kinds of audiences?
Oh, absolutely, straight away. It was the lion's den. You go in. Because even though people before you give you an idea of what to expect, unless you're actually sort of within that situation yourself, because you really have to, you have to sort of carry on your feet, as it were. Things are happening live there in this club.
Mm.
And, I mean, it reminded me of a story of Cannon and Ball. And it was really funny because apparently these farmers in the countryside had obviously just been straight to from their farm, if you like, to the working men's club at lunchtime. And, of course, Cannon and Ball just looked at this array of produce sitting on the tables and said, oh, is it the Harvest Festival then? And they all went, how dare you? You know, they didn't take to that at all. So what I'm saying is, you've got to be so careful. You just have to think on your feet.
Yes.
And it was a great experience for me. And I learned, you know, my patter, how to sort of speak to an audience. And, you know, you gradually get more and more confidence. And hopefully then you bring that rawness, you know, of a working man's club into the regular, you know, working domain.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not for the faint-hearted, is it? You've got some courage and nerve to sing Ave Maria in hot pants.
Oh, yes. You've done your homework.
I just love that image. I was very brave.
Well, I must admit, I mean, you know what I'm like. I've always liked the bizarre, you see. So to me, that was kind of like, you know, just the norm. But I must admit, it was at first, because my hot pants, it was like a bib, and it was short shorts.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I was going out with a chap called Andrew Pink. Fabulous name.
Fabulous.
And on the front of the bib, it said, I love Mr. Pink on it. So, of course, I pulled up at this, you know, this working men's club. And straight away, I think they must have thought I was like, you know, something from Planet Pod. But fortunately, when I started to sing, because I had quite a soprano voice in those days, and people always love that kind of sort of choiristic song, don't they? And fortunately, you know, they seemed to enjoy what I did, so I got a booking again the next week.
Fabulous. It went down well. Well, I can't say that there can't be that many comedians who sort of come back. Yeah. Normally you get thrown things at, don't they? Yeah. I guess it's kind of ironic that you're now starring in Annie, because you were singing as, you know, Annie Oakley, and I'm just a girl who can't say no. I can just see you doing that when you won an Opportunity Knocks.
I was quite disappointed, to be honest, Simon, because when I went there for my audition, I sang I Don't Know How to Love Him, you know, and I thought, oh, that was really sort of full and meaningful and everything, you know, with all this passion. And then the man said, because it wasn't, you know, Huey Green as it was, and that was his name, he was the presenter,
yes,
you know, a bit like sort of Graham Norton and stuff, of his day, he was the presenter of the talent show, and he wasn't there, so, but another chap, his representative, said, oh, you've got a funny face, we want you to sing a funny song.
No.
So I said, well, I haven't got anything at the moment with me. So he said, well, come back tomorrow, and, you know, with the choice of song that you think is would suit you.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, that's the only thing I had, because I'd just done it at the amateurs. And sure enough, they said, oh, yeah, that's great, we'll have that. So I'm afraid, if you like, even then, you could say that you were sort of hyped and manipulated, because they definitely choose what songs they want you to sing.
It's a forerunner to X Factor, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, very much so, absolutely. Yeah. Except you weren't kind of put through the humiliating phase, as it were.
Yes, no, exactly.
I think the Burn to the Lions thing is my cup of tea, to be honest. What, you know what I'd really like to see? Mm-hmm. I'd like to see X Factor pared down to 30 minutes. None of all that other stuff, the boring padding. Just get the talent on.
Exactly.
And that's what they should do.
That's what it's all about. And it's kind of a bit like Britain's Got Talent, because it's a little bit similar with that dog that came quite well. Because have you ever forgiven that Jack Russell dog for beating you?
Oh, yeah. Terrible. I couldn't have thought. That's what my career's over before it's even officially started. that was in the time when they were very fond of, if you like, speciality acts.
Yes.
And indeed, this chap came on dressed as a farmer again, and he was called Harold Gum, G-U-M-M.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, somebody else who was very, very famous and popular had the same surname. Who was that? That would make a fantastic competition question.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know who it was? Would.
No, I don't, actually.
Judy Garland was called Frances Gum.
Oh.
That was her real name. Can you imagine? No wonder she changed it.
Yes, I can see why she went for the Judy Garland.
The Wizard of Oz starring Frances, I don't think so. And anyway, this chap called Harold Gum, he had this singing dog. And all he did was he sang, oh, what a beautiful morning. And the dog went, oh, about five times and won.
Oh.
Oh, I was in deep distress.
I bet you were. Oh my goodness! Oh well. I think you've done better than the dog. Now, where's the dog now? That's what I want to say. Oh well, there you go. It's all over.
Oh, sadly, it did die.
Oh. Now, of course, singing's a bit of your thing, isn't it? Because you've even released singles during the run of Heidi High.
Oh yes, I was very fortunate. I was doing. I think there was a documentary about this Welsh couple, and they were getting married. It was from their engagement and to the actual day that they got married. It was the run-up to it and everything that they went through, you know, in terms of preparation, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And I happened to sing the signature tune of it every week. It was a six-part documentary.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very fortunate because it was played regularly throughout the programme as well, little snatches of it. We finally made a recording of it, and it got to number two.
Ooh,
in the charts.
My
I was
goodness.
Beaten by, shall we say, very, very good performer there, so I didn't mind. It was Diana Ross.
Oh, well.
I thought I'm in good company. You
absolutely. Yes. Oh, my goodness. I mean, there's so much to talk about with you, Sue. I mean, It's a Royal Knockout. That must have been an absolute scream as well.
Well, it was fabulous, actually, because it was with your old showbiz mates. Barbara was in it, lovely, you know, Barbara Windsor.
Oh,
also,
yes.
The late, great Les Dawson.
Oh.
We played like a king and queen together, you know.
Oh.
And it was so funny. We frozen. We were freezing. All I can remember is trying to warm each other's hands we were with hot chocolate and hobnobs.
There's worse things to do, I guess.
Yeah.
And was Stuart Hall there? Was he laughing away at you?
Oh, he was. He was fabulous. Hasn't he got the most marvellous laugh?
He has.
I mean, that's what I like about Stuart.
Yeah.
But do you know what? He was extremely, well, and still is, very, very professional, but he's got such a way of being able to, the way he comes across, he's quite a relaxed chap. But deep down, he I know he spends hours preparing all his programmes.
That's always the way. Same with Les Dawson as well, wasn't it? Spent so much preparation time. That's what makes the greatness, I believe, really. Yeah, well, obviously, we're talking about, and I remember seeing this a number of years ago, and you totally made the role your own, talking of actresses stepping in shoes, Suzette, and in the Mark Camilletti farce, Don't Dress for Dinner. I remember seeing that. Do you enjoy playing farce?
Yeah, absolutely, because I tell you why, it's what I call it, it's a real form of high comedy, I call it. It's almost surreal. It's almost like you have to really, really overplay it. Mm-hmm. But funny enough, if it's truthful and it looks like, you know, all these ridiculous things can happen, and they probably would never happen in real life, but if you can imagine that what the situation that you're in is absolutely, oh dear, you can really make it work. And it was fantastic. I was with Simon Cadell, of course, who was Jeffrey Fairbrother in Heidi High.
Brilliant.
So it was marvellous for us, you know, to be able to do a stage work together.
Yes.
And I absolutely enjoy farce because you think to yourself, it's such a ridiculous situation. And it's lovely when the audience are killing themselves laughing.
Yes.
And you know what's coming next. And you think, well, hopefully, you think that's funny. So wait till you see what the next gag is.
Yeah, you're going
to
love
lovely.
It.
It's great to anticipate their reaction.
Yes.
It's really great fun. And also, the great thing about it is, it's only short. You can't have a farce that's too long because by the very essence of it, it's got to be quick.
Yes.
And, you know, one gag tops another.
Absolutely. Yes, yes. And there has to be a conclusion.
With interval. It was fantastic.
Oh, perfect. The perfect length, really, isn't it?
Marvellous.
Now, of course, talking of stage work, it's hard to believe the 30th anniversary of Heidi High, but it must be strange to think of all the sitcoms now, how they come and go, but it went for an amazing 58 episodes, didn't it, between 1980 and 1988?
Yes, it was fantastic. I mean, we were very, very fortunate. I think loads of people, I think, expressed disappointment because of the fact that they wanted it to continue. But I think David and Jimmy, the writers, they're probably quite right saying, look, I think we might have exhausted every element now and we'd like to go out while people are still really, really wanting us to do more.
Mm-hmm.
I do feel these days that, sadly, if the ratings aren't really where they want them to be, you know, the executives, they don't, unfortunately, give a show as much of a chance as I think they deserve.
No.
But also, don't forget, babe, that there were only terrestrial channels. You didn't even have, when we first started, you only just started to get Channel 4. There was no Channel 5, and there was no More 4.
No.
All the different channels. So
no,
we were
remember.
Able, I think, to have a captive audience.
Yes, it really helps. But then once again, it's kind of, I mean, it really was much must-see TV. I mean, you know, you couldn't beat it, really. And I often say comedy's a serious business, but what was it like to work with the cast? It looked fun.
Sorry, what was that again, darling?
It looks like a serious business, isn't it, comedy? But it looked really good fun to work on it. You know,
no,
were you all happy campers?
It's a very, very serious business. I mean, you really, really had to, we rehearsed to the nth degree of our lives, really. We weren't allowed to change anything. If you might have wanted to have put something in, you know, by Wednesday, when you'd fully started to rehearse it, because you had to know it by Wednesday, because they used to have what is called a producer's run, which means that all the other departments used to come in and see a run through, like the camera guys, you know, they could see what scenes they were actually filming, costume people. So you absolutely, really, really rehearsed.
Mm-hmm.
But it was nice to rehearse as much as that because it meant then that when you actually came to record it for the audience in the studio live, you could actually enjoy your performance and, along with everybody else's because you knew it absolutely well. And I think that was the key to it.
Yes.
So when you say, you know, comedy is a serious business, it, you know, it really is.
Mm.
You've got to make sure that your timing is absolutely perfect or as perfect as you can get it.
Yes.
You, when you're with them, when you're working with the team, you do need each other. So you've got to learn to be unselfish.
Mm-hmm.
You have to learn to work with the rest of the people in a good humoured way, and the camaraderie and the friendship that we all developed. It was they'll always be my friends.
Aww.
In fact, I spoke to Ruth last week. I spoke to Paul.
Uh-huh.
I spoke to Jeff Holland.
Oh, yes.
And Barry, my great mate Barry Howell. Oh. He's in Scrooge at the moment with Tommy Steele.
Oh, lovely. I love him.
I spoke to him last week. So
It's so funny.
It's just so nice, darling, that you've still got your friendships.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm sure there aren't many series that can boast that, really, because, you know, sometimes it's just a job, isn't it? But it's so nice. It really came through on the screen that you all were happy campers.
Well, no, absolutely right. But all, I mean, you couldn't afford not to be, could you, when you think about it? I mean, it, despite the fact that they were friends, we just liked each other's character.
Mm.
I just adored poor old Ted Bovis. I wasn't trying to con people.
Yeah.
Oh, we had such fun doing it.
They're all such defined characters, and no one would ever forgive me without me talking about Peggy Ollerenshaw. I mean, no one could play that better than you, Sue. And our son, it really is, isn't it?
Of you to say. I suppose, though, that I suppose if it was somebody else other than myself, and it got popular, then that person probably, you know, would have you would have defined her, I suppose, as the best person. So I think when you get used to actually one person playing a character that you become used to, you actually sort of can't imagine anybody else in the role, can you?
No, I guess not.
I could never imagine anybody else playing Jeffrey Fairbrother.
Oh, yes, I know.
But yes. I was very, very lucky, though, babe. I think we all were. We had such well-defined characters, and the public seemed to appreciate, you know, our efforts. Every week, poor old Peggy was desperately trying to better herself.
I know. Oh, such pathos.
She never gave up, did she?
She never gave up. I love the episode when you're dressed as an insect and your pursuit, the bum competition.
Blimey, you've got such a good memory, babe.
I know, I'm ancient, really.
I think it's fantastic that you can remember that.
It's brilliant.
You know,
I loved it.
When we used to get the scripts, they used to come through the door. All the scripts used to come at once. They weren't just put through the letterbox weekly. We had the scripts, and obviously they were very heavy and big. Sometimes the postman had to hand them to us physically. And I used to have the most wonderful time, babe, going through all the scripts, not just my part. I read it all from start to finish. And it was fun. The funniest thing, it was a highlight of your week when these scripts came through.
Oh, yeah, I bet it was.
And we couldn't wait to read through them all. And
yes. What's going to happen next? What situation is Peggy going to be in next?
Oh, yes. It was marvellous. I felt a bit sorry for her, though, when there was one episode called Spaghetti Galore. And it was Gladys, the character Gladys, Ruth's part. And it was her birthday. And she kept going to have spaghetti for her birthday. I think it was the second character, Clive, when Simon left. And Clive Dempster took her as a surprise to Tony's Trattoria. Now, the reason it was called Trattoria is when we did the read-through, Paul Shane couldn't quite get his head round at Trattoria. So he said Trattoria. He read it wrongly. And David said, "That is funny. We'll keep that in."
Yeah. So great slip of the tongue.
Oh, it was so funny. So there was poor Ruth taken to Tony's Trattoria once for spaghetti. Then she was taken with us as a special treat. And then she was taken by the Smiling Viper, the owner of the camp. for the spaghetti, so she went three times.
Oh, sick to death of spaghetti now.
Yeah.
And how about you with that chocolate thing you used to order? I can't remember what it was called. There's a pistachio on the side. What was it?
No, let me see. And she used to go into the Laughing Cow coffee bar.
Yeah.
Oh, no, and I'm the same. I can't now.
There's this pistachio and something on the side or something.
Oh, yes, with pistachio nuts. And then I remember once, and she said, "I want an Eccles cake, please, and I want plenty of Eccles in it."
Only Peggy could say that.
Yeah.
I guess you must be discovering new fans every day, really. Because Attitude magazine covered you, didn't they?
Yes, they did. I mean, I was very fortunate because I suppose, like a lot of popular series, they're now on DVD.
Mm-hmm.
And it's lovely because obviously some of the younger kids around where I live, they're only 5 and 6, but they obviously know where you live. And they knock on the door and they say, "Can I speak to Peggy, please?" She's not in at the moment. She's cleaning the chalets. And so it's nice to think that younger generations are getting the benefit of you know, the fun that their grannies and granddads had.
Yeah, the Peggy experience. Now, of course, Miss Smith Cathcart, where did she come from? Was she someone you knew?
No, actually, I think Miss Cathcart was actually based on somebody that David and Jimmy knew who wrote it when they were actually Redcoats.
Mm-hmm,
I think all the characters that they drew in Heidi High had elements of people that they knew and they worked with. They were probably just made a little bit broader. So Miss Cathcart definitely existed, but I think where they were clever was the fact that everybody had had an image of what Miss Cathcart would look
like. Yes, definitely.
As, same as Jo Maplin.
Mm.
And it's interesting to find that when you speak to people over the years, they've all got a totally different idea of what Miss Cathcart... I imagine that Miss Cathcart had a very pinched face, not very tall, quite slim, and very strict and very bustly. Very tight perm, I imagined it to have.
In the 80s, yeah.
Yeah, and yet somebody else, totally different. They imagined that she was quite a sort of large lady, if you like.
Mm. You definitely get an opinion of her, don't you? I know listeners have said, oh, I'm very intrigued, because she was just omnipresent, even though she was never there.
Yes, no, you're absolutely right. I would agree with that. So I suppose it's nice to have a character that, you know, is just in your imagination. And I suppose it's nice to think that even though you never see her, people are interested enough to even talk about a mythical character, if you like.
Yes, exactly. That's a good definition of the way it's written and acted, of course, as well, isn't it?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Oh, Sue, I could talk to you all day, but I must just say that obviously this year it's panto free because it's going to be Miss Hannigan. You're going to be in Annie this year round.
Yes, that's right, in Leicester. Mm-hmm. And in a way, I quite like that because, and obviously it's not always de rigueur to do a panto, but obviously because it's seasonal entertainment, it nearly always is.
Mm.
So it's quite a nice change in a way, but equally, it's lovely because the last scene in Daddy Warbucks' mansion, it's great because the snow comes down and we've got a lovely snow falling effect,
mm-hmm.
and also a 60-foot Christmas tree. So one way, you still get that pantomimic Christmas.
Oh, absolutely.
Feeling.
Yes, he's got a big mansion, hasn't he? And I think he can afford that tree, can't he, Daddy Warbucks?
Oh, absolutely. He's a billionaire.
Absolutely. Yeah, we must find one. Now, of course, if our lovely listeners, I know a lot of them are looking forward to coming along there, but they should get along next week, isn't it? It's the 23rd, is that right?
The 27th? It opens on Tuesday.
Lovely.
Yeah, till Saturday. And I think, actually, seats are really, really going well. So I think
Excellent.
People need to get in pretty quick, really. And I always like to say that people can rest assured that they'll definitely get value for money.
Yes.
It's a live band. There's nothing on Click Track or anything.
Oh,
it's,
yes.
It's all sung live.
Mm-hmm.
So I always like to say that because, unfortunately, these days, I think a lot of people are so
yes.
used to not seeing live.
No, they're not. It changes, hasn't it, in the theatre?
And it's great to see a band in the pit, and if people have never experienced that before, how lovely it is. It's a new adventure for them.
Yes, definitely. Oh, that's going to be wonderful. It's going to transform Woking, the Ambassador's Theatre, isn't it?
Oh, I hope so. And the great thing is I can go to the Peacock Centre.
A bit of shopping first.
Yes. And flash my cash.
Lovely. That's what we
fantastic.
Like. Come back with a lovely bright outfit, Sue.
Yes.
Some more help pants.
Oh, yes, hope so.
Well, it's been an absolute joy talking to you, Sue.
I really enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
I hope everything goes well for you and all your listeners.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, they'll all be coming along going, yay, and singing along.
Oh, I hope
along.
So.
Yeah.
Yes, tell them to give us a wave.
Will do. Take care, Sue. Lovely
to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you,
darling.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. And that was the irrepressible and wonderful Sue Pollard, my guest there today, appearing as Miss Hannigan in Annie.